September 5th, 2009, Hope Program, San Diego.
Right now. I do not want to wait at all, said Jiva. I'll put the rocks in my pack and bring them on that boat. I want to go to Krishna. Is this boat going there? Yes, I have just come from Krishna. Now I will bring this boat back there, the boatman said. Can I come in the boat now? Said Jiva. Said the boatman. You have to be light and free. I do not think that pack is light. What is in the pack? There are some little rocks and big rocks in my pack, said Jiva. The pack is not light. If the rocks come in the boat, you will sink down with the rocks, the boatman said. The boat will sink too. You must get all the rocks out of the pack, said the boatman. You cannot bring one little rock. This rock is green, and that one is red, Jiva said. It is hard to put them down and not bring them. Have fun. I do want to go to Krishna, but I want to keep my rocks too. When you are with Krishna, then you will have fun with him. That fun is light and free, said the boatman. Then I will put the rocks down. Will you help me get them all out now? Asked Jiva. Yes, said the boatman. Look, Jiva, there is Krishna now, said the boatman. And the pack of rocks stayed on the other shore.
I hope you all enjoyed that. That's one of 42 books that we're working on to produce for, actually to teach children how to read English. Each book has some pastime or some philosophy or something like that.
The paintings are really nice too.
You like those? Yeah. That's done by a friend of the devotees who's a professional children's book illustrator. She's had 75 books illustrated by Scholastic. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, at the temple, we'll be showing another one. It doesn't have the audio narration that was illustrated by devotees in China. And we'll also be showing one illustrated by devotees in China on Thursday. Okay, we can have a little bit more light now. We can have some more light.
Lights, camera.
You like the dark.
That'll be another theme for another.
Another theme, yeah. I like the dark. I like the rocks. I like the dark.
Are we going to have another show?
We might have another show at the end. I have a bunch of interesting shows, but I thought we would just talk about this a little bit before we have another show, if that's all right.
Yeah,
I have more shows. I've got lots more shows. Then we could just see shows on that.
Yes.
I have a whole tour of Radhakund. And that's one of my favorites, is the tour of Radhakund. Got a show on Radharani and Rodnitananda and Chulamrita Chaitanya. And I have a really nice movie that one second generation devotee put together in London about Srila Prabhupada. But I thought we could talk a little bit first about rocks.
All right.
Rocks and roll, yeah. So, of course, all of our troublesome material desires originally have a wonderful pure form. Whatever desires we have are not something to be really eliminated. That is a Buddhist idea. The Buddhist idea is that we are suffering due to attachment, therefore kill attachment, become nothing, or fight against attachment. I mean, and sometimes we do use words like attack. Maya is attacking me to win the war against Maya. But really, it's not like that in an ultimate sense. Because whatever desires we have originally come from something pure. They originally come from something wonderful. And all that's happened is that it's become twisted. And then instead of being a jewel, it's become just an ordinary rock. Or it's become a jewel covered with sludge and grime. And really all we need to do is look at the sludge-covered stuff and look at the real stuff and let go of the illusion. That's really all it is. I mean, in one sense, Prabhupada often says that we're not really contaminated at all. We're just, by association and identification and attachment, we believe that, yes, I'm a material being, I'm part of this world, I have material desires, and none of that is true. That is an illusion. Whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. My means that which is not. So it is not true that we're beings filled of lust, greed, anger, envy, and illusion. That's not a fact. We are an eternally spiritual being that's full of beauty, of youth, of spiritual power, of knowledge, and of love. That's actually who we are. And all we need to do is let go of the attachments. That's all we need to do. It's really nothing else. Now, in order to let go of the attachments, first of all, we have to see them for what they are. So I'm sure that many of us are familiar with the Iliad and the Odyssey. Right? We learned that when we were in school about Ulysses. Remember the journey of Ulysses, the Trojan War? So on his way back from winning the war, he went through many adventures. Actually, there's a number of places where Prabhupada refers to them. But one of them was with the sirens, which is where we get our word siren from. And the sirens were witches who lived on a desert island where they ate unwary sailors, and there was a whole pile of bones there. Now, no sailor is going to go to an island of witches full of bones. But the sirens would sing, and their singing would enchant the sailors, and their singing would make the sailors think that it was a paradise island with very beautiful women. And then they would go there. So Ulysses had been warned about the sirens. Therefore, he asked all of the men on his ship to fill their ears with wax so they wouldn't hear the singing. But he wanted to know, what is that enchantment? So he had the sailors tie him to the mast, and he said, whatever orders I give as we're going past that island should be ignored. So he was hearing the sirens, and therefore he's straining at his ties and saying, you know, go there, go there, go there, right? And the men, seeing a bunch of witches with bones, they're rowing as fast as they can past it. So once you see illusion for what it is, Prabhupada says in the stage of bhava, the reason that person doesn't fall down is they see the naked form of material desires. In other words, they see the desires for what they are. And as soon as one sees the naked form of material desires, then letting go of them is extremely easy. It's not a struggle anymore. The problem is, if we're hearing the siren call of illusion, then it is not possible to let them go. Impossible. You can't do it. Then no matter how hard you try, right? It says in Bhagavatam that despite whatever knowledge one has, one cannot give up sinful activities if he cannot control his senses. Just theoretical knowledge isn't enough. If I'm in touch with illusion, then I see things differently. I see, oh, it's a paradise with nice mango trees and beautiful young women and nice waterfalls. Let me go and enjoy it.
But as soon as the wax is in the ear, then you go, why would I want that? Let me go for the reality. So we find in the Bhagavad Gita a few things happen, which tells us a very simple process. What does Arjuna do? What is the first thing Arjuna does right in the Bhagavad Gita? He can't figure out what to do. And he says to Krishna,
"You please tell me.
You tell me. Yes. I am now your shishya. I am now your disciple." He comes close to Krishna. He comes close to Krishna. And Krishna, being light, he enlightens. Teshameva nukampartam aham agyanajam tamaha. Nasayam yatma bhavosto gyana dipena bhashvata. He lights everything up. He makes everything clear. And when Krishna makes everything clear, what does one see?
Sees himself.
First of all, sees himself. That I don't have anything to do with this stuff. I have nothing to do with this stuff. I used to live at the old Brooklyn Temple on Henry Street. I used to live right across the street from the temple. And in those days, they didn't have a pick-up-your-dog-poop law. You know, so the dog excrement was all over the sidewalk and the street. And in the summer, when it was hot, you know what people do in the cities in the summer when they don't have a beach? They open up the fire hydrants. Yeah, so they would open up the fire hydrants, and it would just, there was water everywhere. But, of course, the dog poop was still there in the street, and the adults would sit in their lawn chairs right outside their house, and the children would be playing in this water. And I remember walking past this with one of the other ladies. We were walking to the subway station to go on Sankirtan. I looked at her and said, "I'm so glad I don't live here." And she looked at me, she said, "Ermila, but you do live here." So really, we don't live here in this world. This is not who we are. This is not where we live. So when we see ourselves, when Krishna enlightens us and we see ourselves, we see two things. We see, first of all, the real self, at least a glimmer of the real self. And we also start seeing the nature of the false self. We start Chaita Darpana Marjana. One starts to see in the mirror. You see the jewel and you see the sludge over the jewel. What else does Krishna show us when we come close to Krishna?
Himself.
So he shows us him. Just like, look how beautiful Krishna is on this altar. Definitely looks like it's the summertime, huh? It's probably about to go in the Yamuna or Radhakund or someplace like that. Or he just came out. It's so beautiful, so charming, so attractive. So, of course, Krishna in any form is attractive, as Varaha, as Korma, even as Nisinga. Is very attractive. But what to speak of Krishna? What are we all looking for? Just like most of us, not all of us, but most of us in this room are past our prime. Right? And anybody here that thinks that old age materially is a lot of fun? Just like now if I want to see anything, I have to have these glasses, I have to carry around with me all the time. I didn't used to have to do that. So we would all like to be young. We'd all like to be teenagers. Especially now in the West, there's this whole culture of everybody pretending to be a teenager. We'd all like to be teenagers. And just have a party on the beach, eternally. With picnics, playing in the water, and right? Having sports. That's what Krishna is. It's not just that he looks young. It's not that Krishna has the mentality of a gazillion-year-old man. You know, he has the mentality of a 15-year-old boy. He's very, very playful. He's so attractive and so kind. In this world, we often try to get what we want by manipulating other people. Basically, we're trying to force matter, which is all of the exploitation of the earth, the drilling for oil. Even all these machines that we have. I want to push a button and it just does what I say. And we often deal with other people like that. I want you to do what I say. We try to manipulate the wording of what we say or our body language or something so that other people will do what we want, when we want, how we want. And when they don't, we become angry, or we become disappointed, or we become hurt. So, of course, Krishna does things with power, especially in the material world. He's not averse to using power. But in his ultimate form of Krishna, he doesn't use power at all. Not at all. When Krishna in Vrindavan, when he comes to this world, when he wants to kill demons, he expands his Vasudeva. Because Krishna doesn't use force and power. It's not his thing. It's just love. Love means willing. Love means willing. Now, like, what's the difference between a living being and a dead thing? What can a living being say that a dead thing can never say?
I love you.
I love you. Can have desires. Can say, no, I don't want to do that. Right? It's just freedom. So with Krishna, it's so attractive. He shows us himself this attractive world of complete freedom. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said this only in Bhakti Loka. Talking about Niyamagraha, he said, in the ultimate reality, there's only two rules. Have love and don't envy. Otherwise, you can do whatever you want. Whatever you want. Kalpraviksha, lakshabhriteshu, there's desire trees. So attractive. All right, so we see ourself, and we see Krishna, and what else does Krishna show us when he enlightens us?
What we can do.
What we can do there, service, and what else?
His associates there.
His associates.
Yesterday saw Maya behind.
Maya. He shows us Maya. And you'll notice, like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes at length what is the self, what kind of duties the self have. He talks at length about himself. He talks about how to see him in the world. My kids took me to the ocean today, and I was thinking of bodies of water. I am the ocean. I am the light of the sun, of purifiers. I am the wind. So how to see him even in the world. And then he talks about Maya. What are the modes of material nature? How does a living being quit his body? How does one become entangled? How does the world work? Right? And Bhagavad Gita, you have just a summary, and then in the Bhagavatam, especially second canto and third canto, much more detailed. What are the different elements of the world? There's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. How do they combine? How's the pradhan? How are things created? What's the way the world works? The nature of Maya. So he shows us himself, Maya, and ourselves, and everything in relationship to that. So Krishna shows all this to Arjuna, and then at the very end, what does Arjuna have to do? Krishna says, now I've told you everything, now you?
Do what you want.
Do what you want. So I met some people say, that's my favorite verse of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna just says, do whatever you want. So Krishna says, now you have to choose. Then, of course, Krishna sort of pushes a little. He says, but, it goes on for about 9 or 10 verses. Man, man, baba, man, bhakto. Sarvadak, man, purchit. Please. And then when we choose Krishna, what does Krishna do?
Reciprocate.
He reciprocates. What does he give?
Himself.
He gives himself. He gives himself. So you see, there's four things, two that we do and two that Krishna does. The thing that we do is we come close to Krishna. We come close to Krishna. We come into the light. Then Krishna enlightens. He shows us everything. He shows us, these are a bunch of witches on an island full of bones, and here's my world. And then we have to
choose.
And then he reciprocates according to our choice. So there are two things that we do. We come close to Krishna and we choose. Like this boy, Jiva, he decided he wanted to come close to Krishna and then he had to choose. Do I want to keep these rocks or not? So coming close to Krishna doesn't just mean with our physical body, although that helps. That helps. You know, just putting our physical body in a temple, just taking our physical body to Vrindavan Dham or Mayapur Dham, that's a good start. But like Prabhupada was asked in Hawaii, is it helpful to live in the temple? You know, in the early days of the movement, we thought that Kanista, Madhyama, and Uttama Adhikari were geography. If you lived in the temple ashram, then you were very advanced. If you lived across the street, you were not so advanced. And if you lived a few miles away, then you were a fringy. Right? You remember that?
No.
I remember in Manhattan, we had an apartment a couple blocks from the temple, and we were definitely considered, you know, really, really low-class people because we didn't... Then finally we moved into the ashram. And, oh, now you're real devotees. Never mind that we were at the whole morning program and the whole evening program, giving 50% of our money and like that. So we think, you know, it's where you are, and the devotees asked Prabhupada this in Honolulu. They said, Prabhupada, do you make more advancement living in the temple? He said, that depends on whether or not the mind is on a different subject matter. So coming close to Krishna also means internally. There's thinking, feeling, willing. So there's behavior, there's thoughts, and there's emotions. So we bring our behavior in line with Krishna. That, you know, we're moving the fingers on the beads and moving the mouth. We're taking our body to the association of devotees. We're sticking the prasadam in our mouth. We're looking at the deities. Then we take our thoughts. How many times in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, think of me? Have you ever counted?
No, it's a lot.
That would be a real lot. And of the verses repeated in the Bhagavad Gita, there aren't too many of them repeated. One is man mana bhava mad bhakto majjati mam namaskaru. The last two lines are slightly different. And the most often quoted verse, Prabhupada's most often quoted verse, 7:1, where Krishna is saying, have your mind attached to me, ashakta. Mana ashakta. Always think of me. So to have our thoughts absorbed in Krishna. Generally, our thoughts are absorbed in something that is Krishna, but that we're seeing is separate from Krishna. There's nothing separate from Krishna. What am I going to do today? What did I do yesterday? What will I do tomorrow? What's my husband doing? What's my wife doing? What's my kids doing? What are the other people doing at work? What's this sports star doing? What's this rock star doing? What's this politician doing? What will I do in the future? Where will I live? Where will I go? How will I earn money? How will I eat? How will I sleep? Generally, our thoughts are absorbed like that. Instead of, what's Krishna doing? You know, what time is it now? 5 to 7. What's Krishna doing? He's already come home from the pasturing grounds. He's taking a bath and getting dressed for the evening meal and the evening entertainment. And he's going to sit with Nandamaraj and they're going to have a meal and Radharani's going to cook and Rohini's going to cook. Right? Or did the cows wander off from the bandira tree and now they're all lost in the forest and they got stuck in the sugar cane and the leaves are really sharp and they can't get out and they're crying and they're thirsty because there's a fire behind them and the boys are looking for the cows and how are we going to find our cows? And then Krishna starts calling the names of the cows and the cows respond and the cowboys say, we found our cows, and they get the cows out and the fire surrounded them. Krishna, help us! Close your eyes, he said. They open their eyes and back at the bandir forest under the banyan tree. So how much are we thinking about that? How much are we thinking about Krishna? Prabhupada says when you chant Hare Krishna, naturally you remember Krishna. Naturally you remember the deity. Naturally you remember what Krishna looks like. Naturally you think about what he talked about in Bhagavad Gita. Naturally. Just like if you started saying the name of my children or my grandchildren, immediately I'd think of them. The picture of their face would come to my mind. I'd remember their activities. Oh, my cute little grandson is toddling around. And that's just natural. Right? If you say, oh, what did President Obama do? Immediately I see his face. Think of what he's doing. So Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna means immediately to think about Krishna. That should just, again, if you can't do that, then just hear. And then feeling. Thinking, feeling, willing. Feeling. There should be some ashakti. Actually, we all have ashakti. We all have attachment. We may have attachment to our car or our computer or our bank account or our own body or the bodies of our family members, our house. We may be attached to our intelligence, our creativity, our power, our influence, which is all nothing but Krishna. Krishna is the ability in man. Krishna is the intelligence in man. Prabhupada says Krishna is the mother, Krishna is the father. There's one amazing purport where he says, actually, all these are just Krishna. But it's in the wrong way. We're thinking it's separate. We're thinking I'm the enjoyer. But we all know how to be attached. We all know how to be attached. We're all attached to something or someone. It may even be our own self, for which we would give everything. Most of us are giving everything for our bodily senses, which are really lousy masters. Never satisfied, burns like fire. Pleasures that have a beginning and an end, and gradually as you get older, the senses become less and less capable of pleasure and more capable of pain. But we all have some attachment that we're willing to live for and we're willing to die for. It's like one of my grandsons said, why did those guys fly their planes into the tower? I said they were trying to sacrifice their life for something they thought was greater than themselves, for a greater cause. I said the problem was the cause they were sacrificing for and the way they tried to do it, but to want to give your life for a greater cause. I said in one sense so many of us did that. When we left college, we left our family, we left everything, moved into a temple ashram, put on saffron polyester pieces of cloth from the local fabric store, went out on the street, you know, and started chanting Hare Krishna. So we all know how to have this ultimate sacrifice. How to give everything. Are we doing it for Krishna? Are we attached to Krishna? Do we have some feeling for Krishna? When Lord Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys, you know, he came back and then they all manifested as Vishnu forms. And it's explained that each of these forms were looking on their devotees with passion. And Prabhupada says there that the passion, the original form of passion, is affection. And that the Lord was looking at all the devotees with deep affection. Do we have affection for Krishna? So are we putting our body close to Krishna? Are we having our thoughts absorbed in Krishna? And is our affection reposed in Krishna? Do we feel some feeling of affection for Krishna? Oh, Krishna's feeling hungry. Let me feed him. Krishna's tired. Let me put him in his bed. Or the greatest feeling of affection and compassion for Krishna is that Krishna is so sad that so many living entities are going to the witch's island. When the real paradise is ahead. Am I helping? Am I helping? Am I telling the travelers, that's really an island of witches, why don't you put some wax in your ears? Am I assisting him in that mission? That's also out of affection. So we come close to Krishna. We come close to Krishna with our body, with our thoughts, and with our feelings. And the closer we come to Krishna, the brighter the light is. The more we can see clearly. And without seeing clearly, how can you make good choices? Just like we have, right, on this iPhone, you can get a little map of where you're going, just like a GPS, but it also tells you where the traffic is. And they say in management, there's a formula for power in an organization. I call it the ICE formula, I-A-C-A-E-A. It starts with information. You get information, advice, choice, authorization, execution, action. Those are the steps of power in an organization. But it all starts with information. If I don't have good information, then how can I make a good choice? If I'm going to say which way I'm going to drive, I've got to know where are the roads. I've got to know where the traffic is on the roads, right? So Krishna is going to give us all information, all knowledge. Jnana dipena bhashvara. It's going to give us this light of knowledge. As soon as we come close to him, this is who you are. You don't have anything to do with this place. You are not full of lust. You are not full of anger. You are not full of envy. You are not full of greed. You're part of me. And look how wonderful I am. And look at this thing that looks like paradise and is just illusion. Then we have to choose. So we've come close to Krishna. He enlightens us. Then we have to choose. And this, my dear friends, is very difficult. To make that choice. Because even though we see that Krishna's turned on the light and said, it's a bunch of witches with bones on the island. We've been going to that island for a very, very, very long time. And that's where we think our happiness is. We think, I need lust. I need anger. without anger, I wouldn't be safe. People would take advantage of me if I wasn't angry. If I was just forgiving and kind, and I'd get abused and mistreated. If I didn't have any lust, I wouldn't take care of my family. If I didn't have any greed, I wouldn't go to work anymore. I'd just be a useless bum. I'd be terrible. I'd suffer. I'd just be out on the street and nobody would take care of me. If I wasn't envious, I wouldn't be motivated. And we actually have these fears. That I need these things. That without them, I wouldn't be happy. And these fears are binding us to the material world. But when we're close to Krishna, we see them very clearly. We say, it's a foolish fear. The only thing lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion are doing is hurting me. I think of them like a shield with spikes on the inside. They give you some so-called protection while they kill you. So when you see them clearly, you see that, what is the nature of this fear? If I had no lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, madness, I wouldn't lose anything. I wouldn't lose anything at all except some shackles around my hands and feet. I'd be free. And then I would still be enlivened to do things out of a genuine attachment. And then we basically just say to Krishna, okay, I don't want this anymore. And the moment you say that, instantly, Krishna reciprocates. And we've all experienced this with some things. All experienced it with some things. Maybe it was, oh, if I take up Krishna consciousness, what will my father say? Or what will my friends say? I won't be able to go to parties anymore. And we did it. We just let go of it. And it was okay. It was actually okay. Not only was it okay, but it was wonderful. We felt, oh, I'm free. I don't need to do that thing anymore. And as we go on and make those choices to just let go, Now, the mistake we sometimes make when we see things clearly is to think, instead of letting go, to think I should fight it. What happens when you're trying to fight against Maya? Maya gets what? You ever noticed? Trying to fight Maya? What does it get?
Stronger.
Stronger, much stronger. Why? Any idea why? That's her job. But what's the nature of this, that when you fight Maya, it gets stronger?
Well, sometimes if you fight her, it depends on how you're fighting. Sometimes it's not so strong.
You're getting some resistance. Also, what are you focusing on?
Maya.
Focusing on Maya. So a simple exercise. Okay, think about anything you want except elephants. Right? You can't do a don't. It's impossible to do a don't. When you're fighting Maya, you're focusing on Maya. You're meditating on Maya. That's what Krishna said, right? Man Maya Bhava. No, he said Man Manab Bhava Mad Bhakto. Mam Mana, not Maya Mana. It doesn't say think about Maya. It says think about me. So when you're fighting Maya, you're usually thinking about Maya. You're focusing on Maya. I'm not going to. And we've seen so many people fall down like that. Haven't we? All these big renunciates. Don't think about women. Don't think about women. Don't think about women. Think about women, and don't, and that woman, and don't think about that one. Don't think about that woman, and don't think about that one over there, and that one over, and, you know, what are they thinking about? Right? Also, because all of our Maya is originally part of us, it's originally a good spiritual thing. You can't really kill it. You can't kill it. All of the material desires, as I said in the beginning, they're all originally something pure and spiritual. So if you're trying to kill it, that's Buddhist philosophy. You're then trying to kill a part of yourself. It just doesn't work. How can you kill a part of yourself? You become like a rock. So we find that there's ineffective ways of dealing, of so-called making the choice. You think you're making the choice, but you're not making the choice at all. One is to try to repress it, kill it. Kill that Maya. Stop it, cover it, destroy it. Doesn't work. Pops back up again. Hello, I'm here. That way, be quiet. Comes back, right back. Have you noticed that? Comes right back. Like, where'd you come from? I thought I got rid of you. Get out of here. Comes right back. Get out of here. Comes right back. Or to deny it. No, I'm not like that. I don't really have those desires. I'm not really full of lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. That's not me. I am a great Mahabhagavat. That doesn't work either. One looks at it carefully and says, oh, look what I did to my heart. Ew, why did I do that? That's not helping me. Just let it go. Just let it go. And then immediately Krishna reciprocates. So the problems in this process, we can remember the steps of the process. First you get close to Krishna. With what? What three things do you have to put close to Krishna? What are the three things you have to put close to Krishna?
Thinking, willing, feeling.
Yes, thinking, willing, feeling. Behavior, thoughts, and emotions. Get those close to Krishna. Then what does Krishna do? He? He enlightens you. He shows you truth. Then what do you have to do? Choose, and then Krishna reciprocates according to your choice. Now, when you're close to Krishna, it's very hard to make a bad choice. Why? Why is it really, really hard to choose illusion when you're right close to Krishna?
He shows you the right way.
He shows you the right way, and he's really showing you the nature of Maya. Like, it was really hard for those sailors to want to go to the island when they saw the island for what it was. Choosing materialism when you're close to Krishna is possible, but it's extremely difficult. You have to have what they call in psychology cognitive dissonance. You have to be holding two things in the same thing, two opposite things in your mind at the same time. You have to see that something is really horrible and really bad for you and yet choose it anyway. It's extremely difficult. So what I've seen happen is if people consistently make the wrong choice, they also start moving away from Krishna. It gets very uncomfortable to be very close to Krishna and consistently choose Maya. You're so aware of what you're doing. So people who decide, I want to choose Maya, they start moving away from Krishna. At least they start moving emotionally and mentally away from Krishna, if not physically. So they start chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Krishna. Because it's uncomfortable. It becomes very uncomfortable. What happens when you get close to Krishna is you feel uncomfortable being in Maya. It feels uncomfortable because it is uncomfortable. It's like all of a sudden becoming aware. This doesn't fit me properly. It's not working. There's spikes going inside. So the first key is stay close to Krishna. Stay close to Krishna. Always chant with attention. Keep the mind, keep the emotions, keep everything close to Krishna that will make you feel very uncomfortable about Maya. That's the idea. That's the idea. And the other thing, because it's only two things we can do. We can get close to Krishna, we can choose. Those are what we can do. Only Krishna can enlighten and only Krishna will reciprocate. And the other is to know how to choose. What is the process of choosing? The process of choosing is to let go of Maya and to grab Krishna. And I think of it just like, you know, if we have these material attachments and I'm saying, Krishna, take it, here, try to take it. Krishna, take it. You know, if I'm holding on to it tightly, there's nothing Krishna's going to do. He's not going to come. It's just like, you know, if you have some tumor, no doctor's going to come in the middle of the night and put chloroform over your face and, you know, cut the tumor out while you're sleeping. You have to willingly go to the hospital and say, here, you know, take it out. So you have to go to Krishna and say, here, take it, remove the illusion. I give it to you. And then instantly it's gone, instantly. So how to choose is don't fight it. Don't deny Maya. We want to deny it because Chaito, Dharpa, and Marjana, we look in the mirror and the first thing you're going to see in the mirror is a demon. You're going to see, whoa. I'm not a very nice person, am I? Wow. What are my motives? Whoa. And you get scared and you run away. Ah, I can't deal with it. Too much. I'm not really like that. Cover it up. Don't look at it. Or you try to fight it. Ah, stop that lust. That's not how to choose. To run away from it, to deny it, to try to fight it. But you look at it and you say, my Lord, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm part of you. I'm of the same quality of you. I have the same purity as you. And I went out and rolled in the mud. I'm really sorry. I've hurt you. I've offended you. I've gone against you. I've seen everything separately from you. I've used your energy. I've used even my own self in ways that are hurtful to you and other living beings. And I'm really, really deeply sorry. Not because I want to get out. Not like the kid in the corner says, I'm sorry. Can I get out of the corner now? That's wanting liberation. But Krishna, if you want to keep me imprisoned birth after birth, Mama Janmani Janmani Shurai, that's okay. But I don't want to offend you anymore. I don't want to hurt you anymore. I'm really sorry that I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry that you have experienced some pain in what I've done. Please excuse me. And I don't want this anymore. Really, I just don't want it anymore. I think I'm done with it now. And that's it. That's how to choose. So if one does those two things, always stays close to Krishna, and chooses rightly and consistently, then spiritual life will be, first of all, very fast, and second of all, extremely joyful. Whereas if we stay on the cusp and like, well, I'll get a little bit close to Krishna now for a minute. I think I'll move back away again. Right? I'll try to get a little close. A little too uncomfortable seeing that Maya move back. Or if we think we're choosing, but what we're actually doing is finding a way to say, oh, it's too hard to choose Krishna. It's too hard. I tried to attack Maya. I tried to repress Maya. It didn't work. The spiritual life doesn't work. Too hard. Too difficult. Give up. So those are the basic mistakes. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements.
Well, here's the classic question.
Okay.
At a certain point, we were very close to Krishna, and we were in the spiritual world, and making all the right decisions.
Yes.
Now, why would we ever turn away?
Why would we ever turn away? Well, two answers to that. Even if you see the truth clearly, you can still choose wrongly. Seeing the truth clearly strongly impels you to make the right choice, but it doesn't force you. As I said, it's very difficult to stay very close to Krishna and make the wrong choice consistently. It's extremely difficult. It's very, very difficult. But it's possible. It is possible. We have that ability, and we have curiosity.
Prabhupada compares that to a child sticking his hand in a fire. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the chances, once you've done that, that you'll do it
again? That you'll do it again. But there may be some curiosity. And also, Prabhupada explains our first fall down is as Lord Brahma. It's not much of a fall now. I think of it just like somebody, you know, their parents always tell them, don't drink alcohol. And, you know, they see some alcoholic bum in the street and his vomit. Oh, you'll become like that if you drink. You know, you'll lose your brains or whatever. This is your brains on alcohol. And one day they're out with some friends and, you know, they drink a beer and they think, that's not so bad. I didn't end up in the gutter in my vomit. I just had a good time. Right? Some people are going to drink one beer and then they're going to say, well, I'm never going to do that again. And other people, they're going to say, it's not so bad. And the steps from that to being an alcoholic lying in the gutter in your vomit, they're very gradual. It's not that a person is, you know, one day wakes up and they're an alcoholic. It's a very gradual. So it's not like we came from the spiritual world and we became a human being in Kali Yuga. You know, that seems ridiculous that I would leave the spiritual world for this. Why would I do that? I wouldn't. But it's a very gradual thing. You take birth as Lord Brahma, and as Lord Brahma, you know, you're still connected with Krishna. You're Krishna's son. You're seeing Krishna all the time. You have a pretty subtle material body. And it's very, very subtle. You don't have, from our perspective, Lord Brahma has no misery. He has some slight anxiety about the demons. And he's doing devotional service. You know, people always ask, can I have sense gratification and devotional service? So Lord Brahma sort of has that. And he's God of a universe. The universe is like his body. That's why we left. We wanted to be God. Then Krishna fulfills that. Eko bahanam yo virarati kama. He says, okay, be God of a universe. And I'm sure that some souls take one birth as Lord Brahma and say, get me out of here. What did I do? I've given up my eternal rasa to be God of a universe. What kind of pleasure is this? And then others think, it's not so bad. Why do I think Maya was so bad? I still have devotional service. I'm still seeing Krishna. And I get to be God of a universe too. Not so bad. And as you're God of the universe, you're looking around and you start getting attached. I think about Daksha. Daksha is the son of Lord Brahma, direct son of Lord Brahma, born directly from Lord Brahma's body. Very elevated soul. Very elevated soul. But he offends Lord Shiva. Out of pride. And next birth, that birth he was a Brahmana, really a Brahmana. Next birth he's a Kshatriya. And next birth he has to take birth from a woman's womb. Doesn't just manifest. And even then, he's a great soul. He says the Hamsaguya prayers. He sees Lord Vishnu face to face. He experiences at least momentary bhava. And then, you know, he offends Narada Muni. And then we don't hear about him again. So it's a gradual fall down. And something gradual, you know, you don't always see it. If you've come down 10 steps, and all you look at is the step right above you, you say, well, I haven't fallen down too much. You know, first you compromise with one thing, and you think, oh, it's a little thing. It's a very small thing. It's not very significant. Yeah, it probably isn't. And then you make another little, you know, you're kind of inching away from Krishna. I only moved away a centimeter. I can still see him. You move away another centimeter. And if all you're comparing is the last centimeter, it doesn't seem like you've gone very far. But all of a sudden, after many years, you know, you kind of look and go, oh, wow, I'm miles away. So something like that. Yes, Prabhu?
It just seems to me like, you know, that Krishna is all-knowing, and there we are in the spiritual world, we have this curiosity. Wouldn't you give us like a bullet point presentation on the material world. Maybe you did. I just
well, you know, just like we tell our children good instruction, they don't always do it.
So we got the bullet point presentation.
I'm sure Krishna doesn't just say, "All right, now get out of here, you rascal! You had, you know, one impure."
There's a lot of problems.
Sometimes he says
that.
He
appeals
like
to us, not to go.
He appeals to us.
Anyway.
Yeah. The difference between that kind of leaving and fall down in a conditioned state is that once you're in a conditioned state, fall down is not so much a matter of will. The way I think about it is, you know, the fall down steps in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You all know that. First you?
Meditate on the object.
Meditate. Contemplate. From contemplation comes?
Attachment.
From attachment?
Lust.
Now, I want you for a minute to think about what we mean by lust. Of course, lust doesn't just mean sexual lust. But it means you want something so much that you're willing to pay any price to get it. And I always think of Bill Clinton. You know, he wanted that intern. What was her name? Monica Lewinsky. He wanted her so much, he was willing to throw away the presidency of the United States of America. That's ridiculous. I mean, what higher position can you have on this planet than being president of the United States? And you're going to throw that in the trash can for an intern?
Probably wouldn't get a car.
Yeah. Well, that's the way lust works. Lust is like, I'm going to get this. It covers your intelligence. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the mood of lust is that I don't care what the consequences are. I'm going to go for this.
You deserve it. That's what you think you deserve it.
Yes.
That's the false ego.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Prabhupada talks about going to the demigods as a form of lust, where one thinks, I deserve more than I've gotten by my karma. I want to circumvent my karma. That's another way Prabhupada describes lust. I think I deserve it, which is a good point because that's the opposite of humility, the natural humility that's there with prema. So for one who's already in the material world, then after lust comes, oh, before I say that, after lust comes
anger
and then
bewilderment
of memory and falling down into the material pool. So when one is very conditioned, we often don't see this until we're right in it. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you've lost your intelligence. You don't even notice you've lost your intelligence. You go, oh my God, I lost my intelligence. An hour ago, or a week ago, or a month ago, I lost my intelligence. You're already, it's like you don't see it coming until it's already on you. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden you're angry, and it's like you didn't see the steps. You know, it feels like anger just sort of descended from the sky, and you didn't see where did the contemplation, attachment, and lust, where was that? You didn't see it. And that's the fall down of a conditioned soul is much more like that. It's like you fall and you, how did I get here? Why did I do this? Why did I say that thing? Why did I do this thing? How did I get here? But the more you advance, the more you start, it's like you recognize it from a distance. You see the contemplation even before you contemplate. Oh, there's contemplation. So in order to go through the fall down from an advanced platform, you have to really make a choice. It's really a conscious, willful choice to say, I want to do that. Whereas once you're conditioned, it's more, you're just sort of bewildered and just, oh, here I am doing that. But yeah, we have the ability to make that conscious choice. I mean, one other example that I often give is that of smoking cigarettes. And I was, from the time I was two or three, my father, because his parents had died from smoking, my mother's father had died from smoking. This was before the days of the advertisements on the packs and stuff. And this was when they used to advertise cigarettes on television. Yeah. And he said, if you ever start smoking, I will take you to the lung cancer ward of a hospital. And in 2 weeks, if you don't give it up, I'm going to throw you out of the house. You know, I did one time smoke half a cigarette.
Did you inhale?
Of course.
Joking, my dear.
Yes, I did. But, I mean, part of it was I took my father's warning very seriously, but a lot of it was not so much his warning, but just that my father and I were very close and I just didn't want to hurt him. But even though there's so many warnings, people still smoke. Why do people smoke? There's so many warnings. You know, in our Gurukul, we showed this graphic movie of what happens if you smoke. And most of my students haven't smoked, but some have. Why? We have free will.
Everybody else is doing
that. That's how I'm going to be attractive. You know, you see the billboards, the guy's got his arms around not just one beautiful woman, but two under the waterfall. And you think, yes, I'll be attractive. It's not rational. Our fall down is not rational. One difficulty I think we have with this is that it's not logical. To be away from Krishna is not logical, and it's very hard for us to admit that I did something that dumb. It's really, really difficult. That's why humility, Satsang Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, basically humility and prema go together. One has to really be humble enough to say, I did something that dumb. I really did something that dumb. Not only did, not just past tense. I am doing something that dumb. Because that choice to turn away from Krishna is not just a one-time event. It's an ongoing thing that we're choosing at every moment. The soul is screaming, put me in illusion, put me in illusion, put me in illusion. That's the paravak, the voice of the soul. And a lot of becoming Krishna conscious, the first step in knowledge is humility, is going, whoa, what am I doing? What am I doing? Why am I doing this? For what profit? What am I getting? How foolish I am. And it's a deep mourning. It's not a depression or a self-hatred, because if you hate yourself, you're hating part of Krishna. It's not a self-hatred, but it's a very deep mourning. It's a deep grieving. Like Govinda Swarupu said, he said, you know, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. He said, but I found chant Hare Krishna and grieve. There's some grief. If I have a very close, loving relationship with someone, and they're my best friend, and I've done something to hurt them, if I want it rectified, I have to go through some grieving process. I have to say, I'm really sorry. And I have to really empathize with the other person. So there is some deep mourning. It's a very intense humility. But that, unlike the mode of ignorance, low self-esteem of the material world, that humility and grieving is very sweet. Because it's part of reestablishing a relationship of love. It's a mixture of mourning with love. And it's the only, it sort of intensifies the love. So it's a very, very beautiful, beautiful thing. But our difficulty with dealing with the fact that we're fallen is due, my dear friends, 100% to pride. I couldn't have done that. It must be Krishna's fault. Krishna didn't show me the right PowerPoint, you know.
And that's real common, that people become angry and blame God.
Oh, yes. Well, our envy of Krishna is very much mixed with anger. Very much mixed with anger. We have a deep, deep anger, actually hatred of Krishna. I hate that he's God and I'm not. Why aren't I running the show? Why is it him? As one devotee said when he read in Krishna book about rasa dance, he thought, can I get one gopi? Does Krishna have to have all of them? So it's a very deep existential anger that we're harboring. A very intense anger. And when you come close to Krishna and stay there, you'll see it. Sooner or later you'll see it. And then it's a question then of not denying it, not trying to repress it, but looking at it and letting it go. Saying, I don't want this anymore. This is nasty. It's killing me. It's damaging me as a being. And it's making me think that I'm something that I'm not. Would you like to show us and see another little film?
Mm-hmm.
I have a really neat Prabhupada film I could show you. And we could end there.